Well, first of all, thank you all for coming. You've been running up and just rushed on here. I appreciate that you're making the effort, and I hope that maybe it's on something that you're going to be, but it's, I'm absolutely sure that you don't work in anything related, but you're going to find at least something interesting and something that you didn't know about my situation, about what happened in Madrid at this point, and that, I don't know, could be useful in any way in the future. So, but also I would like to thank Sarah and Martin for inviting me and coming to this really like impressive institution. I don't go every day to the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, so I'm very, very happy to be here. So, well, as Sarah said, I'm going to be talking about the early 20th century Madrid, about infants, about the institution that I did my thesis. So it's a sort of a bridge paper, a bridge presentation on what I have been doing in the distant past now and what I'm going to be doing next in the next 2 years at INET. So, as she said, I studied infant abandonment in the Foundling Hospital in Madrid between 1890 and 1930. And I'm a historian by training, but with these children that were abandoned, what was extreme was their mortality. So I got involved in this computation of demographic rates and mortality, and then I got hooked into historical demography, and from then I moved to a more stable populations, working on infant mortality, and that's when I went to Sweden. But now I'm at INET, and I'm going to try and work into in an even slightly wider scope, which is my project is going to look at the existence of socioeconomic difference in mortality in this moment of the transition from the 19th to the 20th century. And I'm going to be using individual level data for the cities of Madrid and Stockholm. So why doing that? Well, the thing is that most of what we know about socioeconomic differences in the past comes from aggregated rates, because of course for the past we don't really have good data. Or when we do have really individual data with very good quality, they are very small samples, because of course if you have to get all this data yourself, you generally choose places where you actually can get a full coverage and you don't have problems with censoring and stuff like that. So unfortunately they are like medium cities or mostly rural areas, clusters of parishes. So my feeling is that there's going to be a different story that what we can tell right now from studies like the demographic numbers in the exploration of economic history that was published in 2011, were looking at socioeconomic differences, and in these periods they didn't find out many things going on and not really related with industrialization. But, well, these are rural areas, small places. So let's see what happens in when you go to cities, maybe not industrial cities, but at least of a certain amount. Madrid had 500,000 of inhabitants in 1800, Stockholm had 300,000, so let's see. So why is this relevant? Because Madrid is the data that it's been developed at the Council, the Spanish National Research Council, where I did my thesis, and I want to go and start working with that data. But it's not really ready yet, the Stockholm data is not really yet, and I just moved to Paris, so I started doing something linking this all research with what I'm going to be doing next, which is working on infant mortality in Madrid. So why is relevant looking at these things? Well, it's relevant because I've been finding in previous work different bits and pieces that seem really interesting. First, the mortality was extreme, in excess of 600 per thousand, 700 per thousand in the Foundling Hospital. And the impact that inclusion of this population had, when you look at the aggregate, is huge. And the mortality of the city increases by 10 to 15% when you include this population of special infants. However, who are these infants? The thing is that there's also a case of selection into the Foundling Hospital. Of course, they were not randomly distributed and then thrown inside, but they had a very specific profile. So maybe that's the reason of all this mortality. But then other pieces of information says that the amount of infectious diseases was really, really great compared to what you would see outside. However, so far, all these bits and pieces, and I haven't done a straightforward comparison of what happens inside, what happens outside, and see really to what extent they are exceptional or not, or how this more or less works out in the mortality at that time. And also, you never should say that you do things because the data is available, but in this case, the data is very rich and available to be used. Cost of debt data on fundings is really, really scarce, and I haven't seen anything published in English with cost of debt data. And the Madrid data set is an individual level data set for the whole city of Madrid, again, a very big setting. And, well, I think it's an opportunity to start working on that. There's still something's missing, because we don't have socioeconomic status of the infants, for example, because we will get that from the information of the mothers when we link to the census. But still, I think some things can be done, and we can start having a look and untangling some of the things that happened at the beginning of the 20th century. So, obviously, this is setting the oldest excess mortality in cities, still in the beginning of the 20th century in Spain. Spain is one of these places with the Mediterranean areas where the mortality decline started later, and we don't see it until really the 1870s or something like that, no change in mortality. So at this point, we still, infant mortality was like 236,000 in Madrid, which was like 200 in the countryside. It's still really, really high rates, but it's still an important difference. And that's true for infants, but also for children. Although, and infants generally, they are thought to be less affected by this type of short economic stress or living conditions or socioeconomic status, because to some extent their lives are more dependent on the mothers, or they have more biological issues that can be determined in their mortality instead of all these exogenous things. But still, we see a lot of differences, and the different studies in rural areas but also in cities that found religion, socioeconomic status, particular features of the city, proximity to particular places or pools or pipe water or stuff like that. So even infants that shouldn't be that important, the differentiation, there was a lot. And in my case in particular, not only we have all this variation within the city that was growing incredibly at that time, but we have all this layer of these institutions working in the city. Like in any place, institutions are going to create some bias or some particular effects in the city, because they select people inside, but they treat them at the same time. So you have this combination, that difficult to study combination of circumstances that make these clusters of mortality, and that I've said before, that really imply different mortality rates. So the thing is, to what extent were they different, these kids? Because that's the question. If they were essentially the same children that you would see outside, but only at a higher level of mortality, well, that's it, okay, that they are a part of the city and we should really think about them like that. But if they were exposed to a particular set of circumstances that really increase the mortality beyond anything that can happen in the city, we really need to take them apart and just study them separately, because otherwise we're just pulling things completely different. And that's basically where my paper goes. And well, last thing, the only thing that has been done in studying the cause of death of foundlings, unfortunately, no cause of data, as I said before. So the doctors, they had their own view of what was going on. They had their own explanations. But they were the guys in charge of keeping these children alive, and they were not very successful at it. So to what extent can we trust what they say? Well, it seems that in some cases we can. But in general, the consensus, when you read the literature and the different works by different scholars in different places, there are two main reasons. The first one, they were too sick when they arrived. They had congenital diseases, syphilis, and whatever things that their infected mothers or tubercular mothers or alcoholic prostitutes, whatever they transmitted them, it was impossible to keep them alive. But the other thing was that the feeding inside the institution was not particularly easy, to feed 1,000 children arriving annually at some of these institutions. So that's basically the explanation. But we don't have like any hard data to follow. They say that they do statistics, but that we never see them. So essentially, this is a preliminary paper on this part, just putting these two things together. I'm going to just show you what I've been doing on investigating these causes of death and just looking at these two populations, looking first at the structure of causes of death and then having a look at these determinants of mortality, how they vary within these two groups. So, as I said before, Madrid at the beginning of the 20th century. It was a big city. It was reaching 500,000 of inhabitants, and it was in a dynamic that with the migration that would double the population by 1930. So at this point, it was still trying to get rid of all the structures of having been an imperial capital. Only in 1898 we lost the last colonies, and then the city could start thinking about itself as a proper city, not as a normal metropolis, but so things are starting to develop at the moment where I study the city. As I said, migration was huge. By 1900, already 50% of the population had not been born within the walls of the city, and they were mainly coming to the booming industrial construction sector. Madrid had no industry. The only industry in Spain was focused on Catalonia or the Basque Country. So Madrid was a service city, but it was becoming so, and it was acquiring the role of a capital like Paris or London. In a lower scale, but also becoming the center of transportation, the centers of commerce and finance, of all these things. And the service sector was huge too, with drawing from the countryside lots and thousands and thousands of women every year. So, this is the Madrid in 1902. We have the first map, and it's going to be relevant in a couple of minutes. And it became something completely different by 1930, is when I talk. If we think about population health terms, well, Madrid was a mess. In 1902, one of the prominent doctors in Madrid wrote a book called Madrid, the City of Death. And that basically gives you the feeling about what was going on at the beginning of the 20th century. The battle against infant mortality had been really alive in the royal academies, in the medical societies and different scientific societies, and people were very worried about how huge the mortality was. And when they compared the figures with other countries like England, Wales, or France, or wherever, and things had started to be done at some point. The first milk depot was implemented in 1802. The first dispensaries for small kids were also implemented around this time. So this is a moment of great change, but where still there are many things that had been done, and the mortality was really, really important. And Madrid had many charities, but not sufficient to really be able to accept the demand that the city needed, and all the poor people that that had been attracted to the city to work or to do whatever, but they could not really find a job. So, in a way, it was overcrowded. So, among these institutions for children, the main institution that we find to cater for infants was the Foundling Hospital. So, if you know something about abandoned infants or of foundling hospitals, is that, well, here it appeared in the London one in the 1800s. The Foundling Hospital in Madrid was founded in 1572, so it had a longer trajectory, and also in Catholic countries things went slightly different from other places. But essentially, the way that London Foundling Hospital was working in the 18th century, Madrid had been working since the 16th, and when we find it in the 20th century, essentially nothing had changed. It had moved places, and more children were abandoned, but essentially that was about it. It was a very old institution, thinking still about that illegitimate children had to be abandoned so as to release mothers of the burden of shame of having to care for them, and also, but it also had this like welfare function in which illegitimate children could also be abandoned if their parents could not really cope with the cost of reading them. So it had these two features that had been key from the 17th century. But we are talking about 1900. We are talking about 1,000 to 1,500 children abandoned every year that had to be taken care of and sent away. So, and the process was essentially the same as in the 16th century. Children were taken in for a time. They were breastfed by internal with nurses who were available in the institution, or if there weren't, they were put to the bottle fed, which was something very dangerous to do in the beginning of the 19th century. And as soon as they could find a wet nurse available living in the countryside, they were placed away, so they did not really have to reside in the institution premises. So at a given point in time, the institution could have up to 5,000, 7,000 children distributed around the provinces around Madrid under its care. The data that I'm going to talk about the Palma Hospital, but also about Madrid. And this data is going to be under the umbrella of what's called the ISDIMAT. The H is for historical, and the IST thing is the spatial data infrastructure, which is something that geographers are really crazy about right now, but I'm not really into it. And the thing is that it basically, from my perspective, is a historical GIS with a bunch of stuff that is really good to be shared with people, and they can be downloaded on the web page because it's in a web page, and then you can have a lot of data attached to it and be represented in this interface on the web page. When it's completed, it's going to be this internet interface with a bunch of data from the historical demography of Madrid at the beginning of the 20th century. So far, only the part of the geographers is really ready, and it was launched last month, and actually you can go online and have a look at it, and you have the map that I was showing you before, 1902. It has been geocoded, and it has a lot of information about the city in that time. But in terms of demography, there's not that much. Some rates on the birth and death and stuff like that, but all the geography ready to be worked in when we can. So from the part of the data that's gonna be what I'm gonna talking about, we want to have the civil registration, the listing of inhabitants, we have everyone listed in the city, and then we have all the sources that we want to include. So far, the listing of inhabitants is right now like 3/4 of the population living in Madrid in 1905 has been digitized. Some partial linkages have been done, but not really good so far. But what's ready is the civil registration of births and deaths of these 2 years. So, and that's the data for Madrid that I'm going to be talking about later. And other sources, we're working with some hospitals and with other things right now, but the part that is ready right now is the Palma Hospital data that goes from 1890 to 1932. So, if you've seen birth or death certificates, they're fairly the same everywhere. You have the basic information, no socioeconomic status or occupation or anything like that, unfortunately, but the basic things to start working and knowing this population. The thing is that, of course, in Madrid, we've been working so far with aggregated statistics because there was nothing else. They were published. This is the number of births, deaths, whatever, and we did our computations. When we got our data, we started thinking, oh, now we can really do good things, linking this information and putting things in cohort, and start thinking really in a more contemporary demography way. But, of course, the historical data never really lets you work the way you would like to, and we have some problems of linkage, of problems of the way that the records have survived and the way that we can actually measure what was going on. So we have a bunch of deaths that had not been able to be matched to the birth of they correspond, and there could be different issues of over-registration of death of the city because there was a lot of migration and people that could be dying inside but being born outside, and yeah, we cannot tell anything about it, and we don't have any proof of survival up to, I'm going to be talking right now about infancy, so just concern from 1905 to 1907 and the lives that are caught in that space. So we have no really proof of survival. They did not die, but they could have moved away and we wouldn't know about it. So it's not a perfect sample. It's just something that we've been working on and we want to try and work with it. And yeah, there's this problem of not linking some part. There's like 15% of deaths that cannot be linked to any birth, and we've done things even manually just to be sure that we are not just missing anything, because it's a relatively small amount of births and deaths, and they're not there, so we don't really know. But we've done some tests, and even the mortality rate that we get when we study these infants in the city is lower than what we would get when we do any aggregated analysis. Still, it has the same feeling and the same cause of death structure. So we are not very concerned, or in this case I am not very concerned, that when I say something about the cognitive structure of the city, and when I'm talking about this particular sample of infants, I'm not really that far off from what it should be if we were considering the whole city, because my estimation suggests that the structure at least remains constant, even if we're losing some deaths. The other source, or the part, the other part of the sources, are the records from the institution and admission books when children came in. They wrote everything down they knew about them, and then they had another book when they wrote everything that was happening to them. So it's very easy to link by a number and to know the life histories of these kids. And that's where the easy part stops, because then you have to understand what was going on. And differently to other places, children could arrive from any age up to 5 years. So you have children entering at any point in their life. Most of them, they were newborns. They were born in the maternity hospital, which was in the adjacent building to the foundling hospital. It was actually a whole welfare institution. So most of them, we have them from the very beginning when they are born, but some others arrive later. And then, well, they could leave for a hospice or other institution at some point. We are not really sure why. And they could be retrieved by their mothers, apart from dying. So we have left truncation, we have right censoring, and then we have this process of placement that I was talking to you about before, that they were removed from the premises. So they are under the care of the institution, but they are no more in Madrid. So we have to deal with this situation. And when we think about the studying causes of death in the past, that's a really complicated thing, and there have been dozens of papers written about how to go about it and how which are all the problems. And there's diagnostic fashion, the changes in the criteria used to define the diseases, and the anatomic criteria, theological criteria, the changes over time, geographical changes depending on rural or urban areas, or who doctors or lay people certifying that. So it's a very complicated matter that, for Madrid at least, it's a very short period of time. It's an urban setting more or less, so some of these issues are gone, some others remain. And what I've used in my work is a classification that was made in 2003, where they tried to, they did something, a sort of like McCune-like classification, where they use this infectious diseases versus non-infectious, and they try to point out that the possible vectors of transmission, infectious by water and food, airborne, other vectors, and trying to make a little bit of sense so we can pull deaths that at least go together to give us a sense of what was going on. So I've also tinkered a little bit with the classification to fit my data. So, well, I'll show you about diagnostics in a little bit. So, just to give you a sense of when we look at the aggregated sources, that's from the statistics of the city, and the infant mortality rate, and the huge line, of course, you can imagine, is the district where the Inclusa Foundling Hospital was located. It has a mortality that goes completely crazy. And I don't think you can see clearly, but in the later part, there's actually a change of the line, and there's another district peaking, and that's where the Foundling Hospital was removed from that district to another one. So that tells you that just having a look at the most aggregated level, you see that there was a huge impact without even needing to go deeper. And if you have a look at the geographical representation, casually, or not casually, everything happens in the south of the city. The Inclusa is the one on the left, the hospital. Districts where the hospital or the charity institutions were mostly located were those with the worst mortality, which incidentally also matches with the design of the enlargement of the city. Like many other cities, there was a plan to enlarge the city, and the eastern district, the one with the clear color, was the one where the upper classes were going to live. The one in the north was where the middle classes would be living, and the one in the south where the popular classes and some of the basic industries were going to be located. So it all makes sense in a geographical point of view. For the city. So, okay, so now I just get to proper data. Here is just the computations of infant mortality and early childhood mortality, early childhood from the first to the fifth anniversary. And the Madrid data, I'm here using published statistics, but the rates for the institution are my own. And you see that it's completely crazy. It's almost tripling the rates for the city at any point in time. Of course, there's a decline. There had to be a mortality decline at some point in Spain, but still, all the way through, the mortality is up to three times higher than all the foundlings, even in the infant period, but also in the child period. However, the mortality, even if you see that this is striking, you have to think that the published statistics include this bunch of children that I was showing you before. So actually, the ones on the up, they are already included. So the mortality of the city should be lower, so the difference should be even higher than what you see. But even that is not a proper representation of what was going on, because the lines for the foundling hospitals I have computed here, just percentages, let's say, the months of death before the first year, divided by the number of admissions before the first year. So actually I'm pulling together children that were newborns and they died in the following week, or some that arrived at 9 months and maybe they didn't arrive. So we're just talking about slightly different things. And then we're not taking into account that these children were leaving the city at some point, maybe in the first weeks or first month of life. So these numbers really do not, they tell us that the difference were huge in this really crude way of looking at it. But if we start looking at it more carefully and see how we can capture what was going on, I mean, maybe it's not a proper mortality rate, but then we can have a sense of what was really going on in the institution. I've computed some of the things. So the line that was the traditional one is this one here, where we saw the mortality was around 60% or 600%. And here I just thought, okay, I'm just going to take out everything that happened outside the institution. So, well, it's not Madrid's mortality, so I shouldn't compare it with the children born in Madrid. So you get this, which is already 40%, which is the double of the city, which is already quite a lot, thinking that this mortality happened only at the beginning of the life. But of course, again, we are mixing different types of children, different ages of children, so the risk of dying is obviously different. So what I did was I did a Kaplan-Meier survival estimation. So I get the upper line where the mortality is the four times that of the city, because I really take into account the time at risk that each child is spending in the institution. So we are talking about four times the mortality in the city. And the upper line is just when I go to 100 and it's like, wow, what happened? Everyone died. Well, essentially that's what happened. If you remain in the institution, you died, essentially. If you were not healthy enough to be placed away, you were dying. So there's a huge selection in placement that creates the mortality that we see inside was just up to 100%. In the last period, you see that there's had changes when they started keeping children inside with wet nurses, and the circumstances changed. But when we look at it in 1905, that's what they were all dying inside. So this is just to give you a sense of what was going on in terms of how we get these things, that essentially an explanation of the previous 100 slide. I just thought that the number of each, I'm just taking 1 year here, 1884, just to give you a sense. This almost 1,000 children were newborns, let's say, and then how they are dying of the red dots or the deaths, and how when they reach, well, let's say, 50 days, less than 2 months, there's almost less than 100, and there's, of course, there's some deaths, but that's why we have this 100%. So when we compare our figures, we're comparing essentially these deaths to what was happening in the city, because that was the mortality that we can capture. So, okay, but that gives us a sense of how many were dying and how extreme was this mortality, but it still doesn't really tell us why they were dying. And these are the groups that that you get when you apply the classification. And I've divided the inclusa from within institution and in the countryside to have a sense of these different the mortality of children dying here at the beginning or the others that were dying outside. And we see from the start that the cause of this structure is really different. Inside, infections transmitted by water and food were 45%, where children in the city only 16%, and the main cause of death for infants in the city was the airborne diseases, mainly related to bronchitis and stuff like that. And when we look at the other cause of death that doctors usually use, the congenital diseases and all, they were coming in so poor condition that we couldn't save them. Well, we seem to find, yeah, there's a 30% of causes when we compare it to Madrid, when we only see 10%. However, again, this is the first year of life, so we have to look earlier into the first month of life to really see, to really make a proper comparison, I'd say, because otherwise most of the deaths are occurring outside. And here we see that mostly there's no changes in the column for the foundling hospital, which is again more or less like 46%, because using in the bottom 8,000, in the previous slide it was 9,000. 90% of the deaths occur during the first year of life, occur in the first month of life. So that was a huge mortality. And now when we see the Madrid data, we see that the priority of the causes have changed, and we see that the 30% of deaths in the neonatal period were caused by perinatal and development defaults, or something like that they call it. And it actually, we don't see that much difference in the structure, but we still do see that whether in the city is there airborne diseases are the main killers of the infants, water and foodborne, that is feeding, and anything that has to do with how the feeding was administered to children was what was killing them. However, we could think that maybe these really broad causes of death are maybe pulling different staff in the city and others, because of course we have these doctors in the city certifying in a certain way, and maybe in the foundling hospital they were certifying slightly different. So I just had a look at the main diagnostics on each of the different groups, and things that there are some different things, but they all point in the same direction. In water and foodborne, we see that enterocolitis, I think it's called like that in English, 90% of the diagnostics in that group were enterocolitis, and that's what they said, that's the impossible to defeat enterocolitis that comes the moment that you bottle feed the children. So they were already acknowledging that it was that reason and not any other that was killing the children. While we see that, well, there was some enterocolitis in the city, but it was not the main driver. In the airborne causes, it's surprising in a way to find that there's tuberculosis and lung tuberculosis that does not really appear in the city, because that's not particularly common for infants, but you do see it here. And then that could really connect with this idea that there were sick children, that the mothers were sick, and that's why they were entering. And in other infections, it was the first month of life, there was no other thing to die from in Inclusa, the water and foodborne diseases. And lastly, well, in perinatal and development defaults, this really huge group to more or less cluster all these things that happened at the beginning and do not really fit in the other groups, we see that the Inclusa and Madrid, they had more or less similar amount, but while syphilis was very prominent in the institution, it was not that much in the city, only 14%, and more of these diagnoses related with not being on term or congenital weakness were more prevalent. And lastly, here I have underlined external causes, because there is a change of diagnostics in Spain. I don't know if it also happens here in England. Atherapsia was sort of a diarrheal sort of thing that sometimes was misdiagnosed. So it seems to be really driven this group of external causes, and it generally always lines up to the same amount or in the same way that the water and foodborne diseases. However, of course, I've just been showing percentages to just give you a sense, but we can compute a mortality rate and try and take into account this fact of that we have to think about the time at risk that these children. So I computed cumulative incidence rates for a competing risk framework, and these are the results. And when you have a look at them, it looks similar, but there are some things that they are not when you look at mortality probabilities than they were before. And here I'm just going to underline the ratio of the mortality rates of the institution over the city. There was water and foodborne mortality was 11 times that of the city, while it was 17 in the case of prenatal or external 13. And you see here that external did not really show up before in the when we look at cause of death, but here it really appears as the mortality associated with this feeding, diarrheal diseases, wasting diseases, was lining up with the water and foodborne. So again, feeding and perinatal things are what's driving the mortality. But when we really go again and look at the neonatal period, we see that that's just completely crazy, 40 times higher water and foodborne compared to this 12. So if I look at this slide, what I think is that, yeah, they could be talking about all these perinatal things and the children were very sick, but what was really killing them was what they were doing inside with them, which was not having enough wet nurses available for them, feeding them in a way that was not hygienic, and in 4, 5, 6 days, as some doctors later on would say, they just died because of they couldn't really process this type of feeding. I don't know how I go. Okay, still have to. So, well, the last thing that I wanted to do was something more, well, I just wanted to, from my previous work, what I have found is that when you look at the socioeconomic or socio-demographic determinants that you generally find that are predictors of mortality, when you do it for foundings, you find really funny things. And they do not really match what you would expect to find just thinking about the city. So it was the case and with legitimacy that you don't find any differences by legitimacy. In general, you would find that children of women that they are not married, they tend to do really far worse than any other, but they didn't find that in the foundling hospital. And then after much thinking, we realized it was a question of selection. It's like you're not, again, it's not a randomly distributed sample of the city, it's just the people in the worst of conditions. So when you are resorted to leave your child in the foundling hospital, yeah, there's not much difference between whether you're married or not. It's just that. So with this idea of having a look at the causes of death, and I try to like, go a little bit farther in that sense, because I wanted to see if I would find differences, particularly between perinatal diseases and infectious and things like that. If the other variables of the other things that generally predict things for the city, they also predict them for the family hospital. So I fitted couple of competing risk models. So actually these are sub-hazards, you know, hazard ratios, just a typo in the whole table. And for the different groups of causes of death, in some of them I get the small numbers, but they seem to work fairly well. At least the other infections is the group that has really small number of cases. So I'm just gonna show you a couple of slides with the main results, and all the models are controlled. And and the story they're sex and the season of abandonment that generally are found tell us a story of the things were more seem to have a higher importance in the foundling hospital. Here you see that we do find the same type of result, but it seems like it's more accentuated even in diseases where you don't find it in the city. And more or less the same picture is what you get when you have a look at the season. Well, it is important in the city, and especially for water and food, but for the others, I mean, well, it's not that particularly important. But for the city, for the foundling hospital, it is. I think that, yeah, the presence of summer and the difficulties of getting wet nurses was so important that it really drove the mortality of all different causes upwards. And the only season where it was like better to be abandoned, if there was any, was the spring. Well, still, there was not work outside. The agricultural work was less, so there were more women in the foundling hospital, and you were not exposed to such extent to all the diarrheal and enteritic diseases that were very prevalent in the foundling hospital. And that's what essentially what explained the positive of the advantage of being of the I mean the complementary effect is what you see in the yellow shadow for perinatal. That it was, if you were gonna die more likely from infectious in these months, it was gonna be less likely to die of the perinatal. Or maybe it was a question of how they were certifying, which is another thing. But And what I found when I had a look at this legitimacy issue that I was telling you before is exactly the same story. It didn't really... I actually found something that is consistent with some of the things that I found, that even legitimate children in some cases were more likely to die than illegitimate children. In the case of the selection, could be even higher for these women who were married, who in general times would be okay, would not need to resort to the family hospital, but when they can even be in a really worse condition than women who were more likely to have resorted to abandoning the child. While in the city, you see clearly that the mortality was very high, not only in the prenatal and development, which would go in this idea that women were prostitutes and they were alcoholics and they were really in a bad shape, but also even related with water and foodborne diseases that you would not expect to, not necessarily, that's all would be. Mother's age doesn't really tell us a slightly different story. It generally matched up the institution and the city. And in mother's origin, we see what happens in the legitimacy, and again, I think it's explained by selection. Natives were less likely to be resorting to the foundling hospital. So when they do, they have a really worse situation. So we see the effect of selection. So what can I conclude from these things, these various things? So well, what I try to have a look at is first the numbers, the rates, the causes, and then how socioeconomic characteristics that we can think of may affect this mortality. And in the first case, the mortality was really incredibly high, and it doesn't really matter how you measure. I think it helps me to understand better how the process worked, but it doesn't really, I mean, the numbers just line up, and it was extreme. And I think it's really relevant that we look at why they died, because my feeling is that in all the story that I've been telling is more about treatment than about selection. I mean, there's selection, and I think that the last models are really evidence, if it can be called like that, of there's an obvious selection that you don't need to run any kind of model to think that there was a selection. But this points to that selection had an effect in the way that socioeconomic determinants affected the mortality of these children. But the rest of the things, for me, they point to the fact that there was treatment. And it didn't really matter what they were saying or what they were complaining about, that all these women, the offspring of vice, the children of the fog, and all these ways of, in a way, taking the focus out of the treatment problem, that they didn't have enough witnesses, they were not feeding the children that they had inside properly, and that it was a particular setting. So, I think we've gone. So, in a way, when I think of this, was this an exceptional population? If I have to answer, I think it was. I think the treatment effect was stronger than any selection that we can think. I don't know if this is I have shown enough evidence. I think I should try and do more things and try to look at things differently. But I'm quite confident that what I'm gonna get is gonna be in line with this. That the main thing that they were dying, they were getting infections, the way they were fed, and of course this conclusion, it has lots of limitations because of the nature of both data sets. The inclusive data set has no information on prior health. Of course, this placement in the countryside, which leaves only the sick children in the city, is an initial treatment based on the prior condition, so we don't have access to that. If we could, we could do more things and see really was treatment was really worsening the situation or was not, or what was going on. But basically, this is the data that we have from the foundling hospital, and I have to work around that. And for the city, obviously, the design that I've told you is not the best in the world. I don't have socioeconomic status, and I don't have many of other things. But in the sense that I'm comparing exactly the same, to what extent exactly the same variables for the city and for foundlings, I think it works for me to say that there are some differences there, that when we don't have any other control, because we don't have the control for any of the other data sets. So in that sense, I think it doesn't really pose such a problem. In terms of representativity, to what extent did this happen in London in the 18th century, or in Italy, or in all the other places where there were foundling hospitals? Well, the thing is that the placement practices change a lot over time, and my institution, in a way, it shows that it's a place in a time where there was a delay of placement. Children were not quickly placed. In 19th century, and probably in London, like in 2 or 3 days, children were off. I mean, there was no way of even trying to keep them alive there inside the institution, so they were just immediately, quickly. And many scholars have associated the speed of placement with the mortality, and therefore they are very good, the association is very clear. But at this point that I'm talking about, 1900, in Italy, but also in Spain, the concern over syphilis, the concern of the contagion of from families to the wet nurses, and the need to really have a look at the children before they were placed, made that there was a delay in the moment of placement, and created this space in which hundreds of children had to be bottle-fed inside, not only because they were sick, not only because they did not, because they had to be inside, they could not really. So, in a way, this situation is comparable to places where there is also this space in the placement. I mean, the first month of their lives, they had to be inside. So I think, which actually happened in Florence and then Ocenti too, in the same time, there's the same kind of concerns. So I don't think it applies to previous settings, but well, it would be interesting to know what kind of mortality can we get from these children dying within. Well, I assigned to, yeah, I think I can end up here. I think the, well, when I think about the implications, I think that one of the things that was, I read before what the doctors had been writing about these infants before having a look at the cause of death. And it's very interesting because this doctor, working at this time, he was a member of the Royal Academy, he was a renowned pediatrician, and he was really, there was a scandal in 1900, because people were saying, oh, the mortality of the foreign husband is very high, and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, no, it's really fine. Because he was making his computation to a nice 12% of mortality, which was even better than the population at large, because he was being very cheeky and putting all the children that he had in the countryside with the deaths occurring inside the institution. So he got a really, really nice mortality rate. And he was really vocally, very, I don't know if he was justifying or he was really very good at hiding what he was doing, but he was really, really enthusiastic about the idea. He was doing a great job that, yeah, some were dying because of feeding, but mainly it was that they were really too ill to do something about them. It was they were born in a situation that was incompatible to life. That's the way he put it. But then, and this is slightly afterwards, but with a very similar mortality regime, in 1815, some new doctors arrive to the institution, they have a look at the statistics, they do their math properly, and they say that the numbers that I've been showing you, and they say, no, we are killing them, we are killing them. So when you look at these accounts, and then you look at the cause of death, and there's a lot of problems in looking at that time, because then they start making changes in the diagnostics, but when you have to be very careful what you say, how you believe doctors sometimes, and in this case they had something at stake. It was, in a way, their livelihood, what they were talking about when they were talking about the fates of these families. It was their own performance. So I think it was very helpful in that sense. And lastly, again, connecting with the topic of when we think about cities and when we think about infant mortality in the city, what are we talking about? I think we're talking about very different things. And well, and maybe it's not something applicable to anything, to all places. Not every city had a major foreign hospital like Madrid. Madrid was the biggest one in the country, so, and it was the capital city, so it's a particular setting. But I think still it's interesting to see the degree of variation that you can find even in this high mortality regime. Do you agree? And that's about what I have.